ladies and gentlemen, we're still standing by awaiting the official translation of Premier Hoxha's speech. We are connected with Prague, Czechoslovakia now. That is the warning signal coming to us from Prague, Czechoslovakia, that their shortwave is still in order and that in a moment we are to hear the translation of Premier Hoxha's speech coming to you from that city. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the official translation of Premier Hoxha's speech, which we are eagerly awaiting, seems to have been delayed a bit. We shall entertain you from our New York studios in the meantime.
We are experiencing the most dramatic period in modern history. We have become the center of a crisis which is causing all Europe to tremble. Peace is once more in danger, once more threatened, and more so than at any other time. In conjunction with all the nations by whose side we fought during the World War, we are doing and we have done everything in order that peace might be preserved. Never before, however, has it been necessary to show such strength of heart and soul in making our decision as it is today. It is not only a question of peace, however. Compared with the other participants in today's great struggle, we have more at stake. With us, it is a question of a decent future for and the integrity of the whole Republic. Our whole history is characterized by the effort to improve the relations of our nation to the German nation at home and in the Reich. This unsolved task is facing us now with its whole fatality. With its whole fatality, because the national movement and still more the national education of the whole German nation is, in these last years and these last months, coming to a head. For this reason, it is our historical responsibility to do everything to regulate the Czech-German relations as beneficently as possible from the point of view of the vital interests of our country, as well as from the point of view of the vital interests of the German nation. The whole of Europe knows the cause of our attempts to regulate the question of nationalities. After difficult negotiations we've got so far, that a basis had been found which has been considered by both sides as a just basis for the settlement. Just when it was clear that these negotiations could proceed towards its end, the way of development has been abandoned and revolt unleashed. In addition, abroad, a flood of rebukes arose in unison against the government of the state because the government did not trifle with the revolt, because it proceeded with drastic measures against the revolt. We refuse any reproaches of this kind. We have done the obvious duty of an orderly state. And more, as we showed in the previous period, the highest measure of conciliatory spirit akin to self-denial. The suppression of the revolt against the law is not a persecution. The more, as a basis has been found for a peaceful settlement of the national relations. The government of the Republic has piloted the destinies of the state during these recent months through dangerous reefs and could not take hasty decisions in its actions. It had, however, to step in at the moment, the vital moment, when it became a question of the state's duty of protecting the personal safety of its citizens and the Constitution. Even if the proclamation of martial law has been severely criticized, it cannot be denied that during the attempted uprising, it was only the strict measures taken that we have to thank for averting the worst. It is with emotion and sadness that we think of the innocent martyrs of the rebellion, whom we honor in their supreme sacrifice in performing their duty to the state and to their fellow citizens. The extraordinary security measures have proved completely successful up to now and will remain in force as long as they may be necessary. During the past few months, the policy of the government has been conducted from the point of view of a double responsibility. With consciousness of the responsibility for unconditional maintenance of the state authority in decisive moments, and then with the knowledge of the responsibility for all the possible results which might arise, so long as Czech-German relations are not regulated. This explains our inexhaustible patience in the negotiations. This explains our honorable efforts to see that no excuse should be given for placing the responsibility of the further trend of affairs on our shoulders. Again and again our public lost patience and charged the government organs with weakness. Now the situation is clear to all. By our policy, which is in appropriate places, use moderation, and was at appropriate times uncompromising, we have gained from all friends and also from all objective observers recognition that we have served the cause of peace and that we are fully determined to defend ourselves and that Czechoslovakia is a reliable collaborator for peace. This fact has made it possible for the government to conduct the policy of the state on a firm foundation with internally and internationally. By our policy during the last few months, we have attained a result which at the present time is indispensable. It can be said that Czechoslovakia has met all her tasks and has faced all her responsibilities. It now lies with all the others to do the same. The regulation of German-Czech relations is not to be and cannot be the source of fresh quarrels and a barrier which would be psychologically make the future collaborations of the nations impossible. This is true to a great extent of these areas of Europe where the peace, progress, and happiness of those nations depends on their peace-loving and constructive collaboration. The so-called plebiscite can produce no solution whatsoever which would correspond to this great aim. In this, we are unanimous with all those who bear the responsibility at home and all objective experts on the conditions of Czechoslovakia and Central Europe, so complicated and nationally and territorially. If a plebiscite would have proved a suitable path to the regulation of nationality relations in Czechoslovakia, it would have been a welcome instrument in the hand of the peace conference. A plebiscite in Czechoslovakia is therefore unacceptable, not only from the subjective view of this state, but also objectively because of the very fact that it would create a series of analogous new problems. Czechoslovakia is willing to continue in the work for peace even in the existing tension. In the name of constitutional authorities of the state, I declare, in spite of Henlein's refusal to agree with the Czechoslovak government on the settlement of nationality relations, and in spite of his attempt at a rising, the government, defending the full integrity of the state, decisively changes nothing in its policy of agreement with the nationalities, and especially with the Sudet Germans. This policy of agreement has the government's policy for its foundation. For this purpose, the government today does not require Henlein and the leaders who have pled for the event in our country and the suppression of the rising best shows that the government will treat with the main body of the Sudet German people who desire peace and national conciliation. The government will not pursue a policy of revenge and persecution. It must, however, see that law, peace, and order are respected and maintained. In matters of peace and order, no concessions can be made, because only in peace and order is it possible to assure a complete and reasonable agreement. To Slovakia and Carpathian Ruthenia, today I address only a few words so that I might indicate that the regulation of conditions in both those provinces is proceeding on the right road. After 20 years' development, the national groups and peoples can take today a further step which is necessary in this direction in order that not only the formal legal bonds but also all the moral guarantees of the internal satisfaction of our brothers in Slovakia and Carpathian Ruthenia might contribute to the strength of the Republic. If the state receives at this time the considerable reinforcement of a contended loyal Slovakia and Carpathian Ruthenia, the policy of the state in this direction will be able to point to notable results. It has not been, and it is not, anything less than a systematically conducted political attack on the most important foundations of the Czechoslovak state. It is not simply a partial problem. The question is that we, not only by our international position, but first and foremost by our internal strength, have warded off every attempt that threatens us, and that we should drive away all doubts which could undermine our solidarity. It is not just a question of the self-evident unity of the hearts and emotions, but a unity of reason and reflection, and indeed a unity of all powers. All these unities will be necessary, especially in the near future, when we shall be placed before the decision. If we all speak at the present time of nationality and state policy with regards to the Germans, it would be a dangerous mistake that we should, through the greatness of this one task, forget our internal problems in their entirety. In fact, much more is involved. the broad masses of the people have for long observed the broad-based attempt to disintegrate the internal political structure of our state. When we recall some of the sessions of our parliament, when, in harmony with the members of German nationality, the political groups advanced demands drawn up on the same model, we see this attack. Whether it was intentional or not, the impression was caused that in this state, in addition to the Czechs and Slovaks, all the others, more or less, ranged themselves against its constitution and the eternal order. This order was to be revoked at home and abroad, the impression was to be given that Czechoslovakia is incapable of holding together and that it was doubtful whether she could fulfill her state mission. The intention of tearing us asunder was a direct blow to the heart. Nevertheless, the President of the Republic did not hesitate to place his full official and personal authority behind the efforts at a full solution of all our tasks. We therefore began a policy of national regulation in the form of a number of government proposals. Until recently, everyone was convinced that these proposals would lead to conciliation. However, while the government worked for this by the way of agreement and compromise, the other side launched a covert action aiming at revolution. Our entry upon the 20th year of our state is under the shadow of intrigue against our republic. Indeed, we have lively memory that for a moment even part of the Slovaks wandered from the path. It is worthwhile to emphasize that last year's measures connected with the first stage of autonomy for Carpathian Ruthenia were justified not only from the legal, but also from the political point of view. With little exception, Carpathian Ruthenia did not falter. We are a nation which, despite the fact, or perhaps even because of it, we have passed through the most surprising Golgotha of our history and have learned to maintain our self-control and also in the fateful moments to husband our powers. We have resisted in the recent past attempts to detach us from our allies and our friends precisely because we have, with superhuman self-control, showed that we regard all situations not only from the point of view of our own requirements for existence, but also from the standpoint which is truly European. We do not forget, and we never shall forget, the unique patriotic discipline and consciousness of political responsibility of our people. In the name of the government, I thank you with all my heart for the way in which, with iron discipline and nerves, you have resisted the attack of unfriendly propaganda and political agitation. Keep your patience. Do not let yourselves be weakened by rumored doubts. All of us, the government, the army, the population, are at one. We are not a nation, not partisan sects. The whole nation is at one with the president, who cannot be shaken by any reproaches attempted from abroad. The greater the pressure on us from abroad, the more firm will become our unity. We are conscious that the test before which our republic stands is a severe test, and that every day will make new demands on our strength and on our spirit of self-sacrifice. No one has succeeded or will succeed in dividing us. Long centuries have taught us that he who is incapable of struggle has no right to dream of peace. Therefore, we enter the next days with quiet confidence as people who are faithful to their inner selves, whatever may come. We desire peace and freedom. We do not need to use strong words. We need, and we have, strong hearts and strong minds. This, ladies and gentlemen, concludes the speech delivered today by Dr. Milan Hodža, the President of Czechoslovakia.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard the official translation of the speech of Premier Hodža of Czechoslovakia. This was brought to you by the National Broadcasting Company through RCA Communications.
Odmítnutí vzpoury proti právnímu řádu není persekucí, zejména když u smírné úpravy národních vztahů byla již nalezena vhodná základna. Vláda republiky vedla v těchto měsících osudy tohoto státu mezi nebezpečnými úskalími a nesměla se ve svém rozhodování a ve svých počínáních nikdy okrasit. Musela však zakročit v okamžicích, v těch velkých okamžicích, byla v sázce autorita státu. A když se jednalo o to, stát vykonal svou povinnost na ochranu osobní bezpečnosti a právního řádu. Bylo-li z některých stran vyhlášení stanného práva kritizováno odmítavě, je přece nepopíratelnou skutečností, že v době pokusu o vzpouru lze děkovat i právě jen přísným opatřením za to, že se podařilo zamezit i to nejhorší. S pohnutím a se smutkem vzpomínáme všech nevinných mučedníků vzpůry. Mučedníků, ve kterých uctíváme onu vrcholnou oběť, jíž člověk věrný svým lidským a služebným povinnostem přináší svému státu a svým spoluobčanům. Mimořádná bezpečnostní opatření se plně osvědčila. Byla doplněna a potrvají tak dlouho, pokud jich bude třeba. Byla tedy vedena v posledních měsících politika vlády pod zorným úhlem dvojí odpovědnosti. S vědomím odpovědnosti pro nepodmíněné zajištění státní autority ve chvílích rozhodujících a pak s vědomím odpovědnosti za všechny možné důsledky, které mohou vyplynout z česko-německého poměru, pokud ještě není upravený. Proto naše nevyčerpatelná trpělivost v jednání. Proto naše poctivá snaha nepřipustit nejen důvodu, ale ani záminky, ale odpovědnost za další vývoj byla házena na naše bedra. Nejednou a nejeden z naší veřejnosti už ztrácel trpělivost a obviňoval vládní orgány ze slabosti. Nyní bude situace jasná všem. Svou politikou, když na vhodném místě používá souvívavosti a na vhodném místě je neústupná, docílili jsme uznání všech přátel a také všech objektivních pozorovatelů. Docílili jsme jejich uznání, že jsme se zasloužili o mír a že jsme při veškeré své odhodlanosti bránit své schopni dohod a že je tedy Československo spolehlivým pracovníkem pro mír. Tato skutečnost umožňuje vládě vést politiku státu na pevném základě.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just brought you a portion of an address by Premier Hoxha of Czechoslovakia in his native language. We shall later bring you a summary of his speech. For an English translation of the address delivered by Premier Benito Mussolini in Trieste, we take you now to Trieste, Italy.
You have no need of this, since your morale is most elevated, as it has always been. I have not come to emphasize before the Italians the interests and sentiments of your city, because for many generations the Italians have had the name of Trieste in their hearts. I have come to see what you have accomplished, and moreover, to see if it is possible to speed up our march to attain the goal. I have come to listen to you and to speak to you. There are no particular turning points in the history of Trieste that are not, at the same time, turning points, phases, cycles in the history of the Fatherland. When, in 1866, the young kingdom of Italy, militarily allied with Prussia, drew its boundaries at the Isonzo River, it appeared to the superficial observers that the destinies of Trieste were sealed. 16 years afterwards, Trieste answers with the gesture of Oberdan, while irredentism inflamed the whole of Italian Rome. In 1914, the double monarchy throws its dice, tries the supreme gamble, and loses. After 4 long years of waiting, longer for you than the 50 previous years, victory arrives. You are joined again politically with Italy. I say politically because you are always joined to Italy in spirit. After this historical position had been decided, your imperial hinterland was in pieces. But Trieste marched bravely forward with her spirit of initiative, with her maritime traditions, with her long preparation. What Trieste has done in these 20 years can be seen by Italians and by foreigners and commands admiration. 20 years afterwards, in March 1938, a fatal event takes place, an event which can be traced back to 1878. As you well know, millions of men wanted this event to take place. There was no opposition. Trieste finds herself faced with a new situation, but Trieste is ready to tackle it and win through. Trieste knows that geography is not an opinion, and that it takes its revenge in the long run against those who consider it as such. Trieste relies on her strength. Trieste cannot turn back. She never turns her back. People of Trieste, there are moments in the life of peoples in which men who lead cannot decline their responsibilities, but must assume the responsibility fully. What I am about to say is not only dictated by the policy of the Rome-Berlin axis, which finds its historical and contingent justification, nor by the feeling of friendship, which binds us to the Magyars, to the Poles, to the other nationalities, or that which may be called the number two mosaic state. What I am about to say to you is prompted by a conscience which I would like to call European rather than Italian. When the problems set by history have reached a degree of tormented complication, the solution called for is always the simplest, the most logical, the most radical, the solution which we fascists call totalitarian. In the face of the problem which is at present agitating Europe, the solution has only one name, plebiscites. Plebiscites for all the nationalities which request them. For all the nationalities which were constricted into what purported to be the big Czechoslovak state, a state which today reveals its organic inconsistency. Still another thing must be said, namely, that in certain moments, events assume the crumbling movement of a landslide, and one must act rapidly if disorders and complications are to be averted. This need of hurry must have been felt by the British Prime Minister, who has journeyed from London to Munich, a winged messenger of peace. For it is certain that any delay does not speed a solution, but brings nearer the fatal clash. This solution, in spite of Moscow's campaign, is already penetrating into the hearts of the people of Europe. We hope that in these last hours, a peaceful solution may be reached. We hope, moreover, that if this is not possible, the conflict may be limited and circumscribed. But if this should not happen, if a universal lineup, pro or against trade, should take place, let it be known that Italy has already chosen her side. As for our internal policy, the burning problem of the hour is the racial problem. In this field, too, we will adopt the necessary solutions. Those who would lead one to believe that we have imitated, or worse, obeyed suggestions, are poor fools whom we do not know whether to despise or pity. The racial problem has not arisen suddenly, as it is thought by those who are used to sharp awakenings, because they are used to long, lazy slumbers. The racial problem is in strict relation with the conquest of the empire, because history teaches us that empires are conquered by the force of arms, but are kept through prestige. And to have prestige, it is necessary to have a clear, severe racial consciousness, which not only defines differences, but also marked superiorities. The Jewish problem is only an aspect of this phenomenon. Our position has been determined on the basis of these incontestable facts. While Judaism has been for 16 years, and in spite of our policy, an irreconcilable enemy of fascism. In Italy, our policy has determined, among the Semitical elements, what might be called a real and true rush to board the ship. However, the few of Italian nationality who have undeniable military or civil merit towards Italy and the regime will find understanding and justice. As for the others, we will follow a policy of separation in their respect. In the end, the world will perhaps marvel more at our generosity than at our severity. Unless Jews beyond the frontiers and those at home, and especially their improvised and unexpected friends who defend them from too many rostra, force us to radically change our fate. As for that which more closely regards you, people of Trieste, everything will be done to feed and to enhance your market, which is the second in size in Italy. Work will be given to your factories and to your shipyards, which justly enjoy a world reputation. For us fascists, the source of all things is the eternal force of the spirit. It is for this reason that I claim for myself the privilege of carrying out what has been for your city the dream of two centuries, a new complete university. Padua, which for many hundreds of years was the only Athenium of the Venetian peoples, will in its unfaltering patriotism understand, and it will be Padua which shall offer the standard to her new sister in the Julian province. Men and women of Trieste, after what I have told you, I ask, is there one alone among you of Italian blood and soul who can for one instant, I repeat, for one brief instant, entertain doubts on the future of your city? United under the symbols of the lictor, which spells audacity, tenaciousness, expansion, and power, never think that Rome, because she is distant, is also unmindful. No, Rome is here. She is here on your hill and on your sea. She is here in the centuries that have been and in those that are to be. She is here with her laws, her weapons, her king. We have just given you the text of the speech made by Signor Mussolini this morning at Trieste. This is the AER, the Italian Broadcasting System. 16 years have flown by, and Italy today is a poor people standing on its feet. Italy today is a state. Italy today is an empire. The people of the workshop and of the fields take part in the life of the state. The people feels itself the protagonist of the life of the state. This is of a profound significance. This is what we have wanted, and this is what we have realized day by day, year by year. And if we wish to strike a balance for these last 16 years, we would find that it is a most comforting one. We have secure frontiers. We have reconquered Libya. We have liquidated the old diplomatic trends of a limping peace. And we are strong on land, air, and sea as never before. Besides the power of our weapons, we possess today the power of spirit, that is, the extremely compact moral unity of the entire Italian people. However, certain melancholy foreigners, eternally out of phase with the Italian reality, to be present at this manifestation and to hear your cry that has the rumble of the cyclone and of the hurricane. They should then tear up their useless papers. They ought to recite an act of contrition, because, my comrades, one of the most serious diseases which affect the contemporary world is the distribution of falsehood, especially when it is a question of Italy, because, evidently, many foreigners like the people of the other age better, and we, of this age, have the full right to despise these foreigners. For them, the Italian people should have existed simply to interest and to amuse those who came from beyond the frontiers. All that is finished. All that is irrevocably finished. We prefer to be feared, and we care not a jot about other people's hatred. The world had better get acquainted with this new fascist Italy, a hard Italy, strong-willed Italy, a warlike Italy. 16 years of fascism can be seen in the admirable behavior which the Italian people have shown in these last few days. Other peoples have gone through crises, through ups and downs, through terrors. The Italian people have not for one minute lost their calm. There has been no need to beseech them to keep their heads, for 20 years of war and battles. A revolution like the fascist one has made of the Italian soul a block of well-tempered metal. If, tomorrow, this people were called upon for a new trial, it would not hesitate 1 minute. Black shirts of Udine, if I tell you that it is with a deep emotion that I return among you, you must believe me. But I am above all proud to witness that your spirit has in no way suffered from the fluctuations of the present time. You are the same. You still have the spirit of yesterday. You are ready to obey me as in the past. You are ready to believe and above all to fight as in the past. At that time we marched from Rome. In successive years, the march started from Rome. That march has not yet finished. And no one will stop us. This special bulletin has come to NBC listeners from Udine, Italy, through the facilities of the AIA, the Italian Broadcasting System. We now return you to America.
The English translation of Premier Benito Mussolini's speech to the Italian people has been presented from Udine, Italy. His special broadcast was heard in America via RCA Communications, and this is the National Broadcasting Company.